Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're kicking off the show today with an Ask an Expert segment. And if you're someone currently not that thrilled with your job, maybe you're at that workplace right now, you might want to put in some earbuds and start taking some notes. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you don't like your boss. Maybe your soul is dying a little bit day by day. Look, we've all been there. Our next guests recommend that you try applying what they call design thinking to your work life. In fact, they think that their principles of design thinking can make just about any job a better experience and perhaps even help you find meaning in your work. Bill Burnett, executive director of the Stanford Design Program, and Dave Evans, the coordinator of the Stanford Design Lab, joined forces in 2016 to write the New York Times bestselling book, Designing Your Life. Their follow-up is a new book called Designing Your Work Life, How to Thrive and Change and Find Happiness at Work. This means more than just bucking up or getting over yourself. As they write, quote, "We have all heard the advice to just make the best of a bad situation. That's not bad advice, but if you only make the best of a bad situation, you're still in a bad situation. It doesn't get at the root of the problem or offer any opportunity to change the situation." Bill and Dave argue for using techniques like reframing, prototyping, and storytelling to improve your professional life. They are in studio here, and we want to hear from you. What's making you unhappy at work? Have you tried to solve it? You can ask our experts, Bill and Dave, how to design thinking might help solve your problem or improve your work life. Our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to be here. Thanks, Allison.
So around here, a lot of people know about your first book because a bunch of folks went out and worked with you. But for people who don't understand what design thinking is, can you define that for us?
Sure. It's a principle of, we used to call human-centered design. We've been working on it for a long time at Stanford. How do you design and invent products that are new to the world, new products, new services, new experiences? So we've taken that idea and we've turned it back to ourselves. How do we design the future of our lives? It's an unknown thing, so you can't engineer it. You don't have any data. You got to use some processes like prototyping and iterating and really ideating lots and lots of solutions because there's more than one life in you. And then now we're looking at the world of work because after we finished that first book, everybody said, "That's great, but I still have this job and it's not really working." Or even if I have a job that's working, can you make it better? And we think we can.
Our number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if you want to think about designing your work life. When did you realize, Dave, that you could actually apply design thinking to everyday life? And can you give us a concrete example?
Well, you know, we've been working on this stuff for a long time. Bill and I have about 80 years of Silicon Valley experience, you know, and I was working on the first mouse product in 1980, you know, for Apple and Steve Jobs. So I've been applying design to things for a long, long time. And hey, you know, you could design yourself. I mean, when I was a 19-year-old sophomore in college back during the Pleistocene era, it was really clear to me that I wasn't getting good help. And so I had to design my own life. My father died when I was a kid, and I had to figure my own life out from the start. And so then it turns out the stuff we were doing at the workplace and innovating new products, like, hey, I could prototype myself. I could try this other idea. I could talk to my boss in a different way. So I've been experimenting with my life for a long, long time. You know, the chance to actually then turn that into curriculum that became a class, that became a book, that became a big conversation, it was on the side for the first 30 years. Now it's on the front, and we're hoping to make a difference.
Is this the kind of thinking that has to apply to someone who's been in a job a long time? Can it apply to people in the gig economy?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's a whole chapter in the book on the gig economy, because if you're going to be gigging, even on the side, you got a regular job, but you want to do something a little more interesting.
I mean, giggers design themselves every day.
Yeah. And so, and when you decide to do that, you know, you've really decided to become an entrepreneur, go into business for yourself. So you got to think about how am I going to market things? How am I going to sell things? Mm-hmm. How am I going to talk to my customers and make them aware of what we're doing? So we have I always insist every book teaches a real design tool. In this book, we teach what's called a customer journey or a customer mapping. And then you talk about how do people discover you all the way to when they're done with you, how do they write a nice review about you on Yelp. So we really coach people to think about their gig as something more than just a side hustle. It's really your way of expressing something in the world that you want to do. And of course, you want to get paid more than everybody else for doing it. So you really have to establish, you know, people talk about building your own brand, but you really just have to establish the way you want to show up in the world. And that's a design problem.
I'm curious about, as you sit down to think about these things, and as I was going through the book, I thought, you kind of have to carve out time to do this.
Sure.
To think about this. This is not something, as I was reading, I was like, this means finding quiet time to do this. to work on these worksheets, to actually ask yourself the big questions. I'm not sure this is something you can squeeze in between necessarily picking up the kids and making dinner.
Well, yes and no. There's a fast part and there's a slow part. I mean, Dan Kahneman talks about fast thinking and slow thinking, right? And reframing, looking at something from a different point of view, you can do surprisingly quickly. And then once that reframe occurs, now it might take some time for you to implement what I'm going to do with that reframe. Mm-hmm. So let's say I've got the problem. I'm stuck at work. My job description hasn't morphed much. I'm now bored. It's a good job, but I'm just bored with it, you know, and there's nowhere to go. So, gosh, I've got two lousy choices. Stick with this, quote, now lousy job, or I guess I got to quit and start all over again. I don't like my choices. How about door number three? You know, if you want a better job, why don't you give it to yourself? And redesign. So we say, don't resign, redesign. Mm-hmm. So wait a minute. Oh, I could make this at least a little bit better. And if I can make a little bit better, it's not good enough for everybody. Is it good enough for now? And to do that a couple of times, I'm really buying some serious time, not twiddling my thumbs suppressedly, but I'm actually having life get better. I can decide that pretty quickly. I could decide that listening to this in the car at a red light and then say, okay, now how do I do that redesign? Yeah. But the reframe is really freeing.
And, you know, you... just exchange all that time you spend complaining about what mm-hmm. you can't change and get some agency and change it. I think at the time you spent complaining could easily be repurposed, and it's probably even more efficient. Because once you start thinking of yourself as a designer, you just think of yourself having lots and lots of things you want to try. And it becomes kind of an interesting game.
Sometimes people get jammed up in the choices, and you use a great example about two people trying to decide what to eat.
Yeah.
And could you walk through that? Because I think it really helps you understand how you can see more clearly if you just go through these steps.
Yeah, that's, we share the idea of the best theoretical option and the best doable option. I think it's two guys sitting on a couch. You know, like, hey, do you want to go out? Do I want to eat in? Or it's like, I mean, I don't really know. There's 14 million restaurants in New York, and I'm really kind of a foodie. And I really need to solve this.
I've got this app, and I can get 10 more restaurants.
I've got to solve this complex problem, but what do I really want? And what's the experience I'm really willing to do? And then it's kind of like, you know, that's just too hard. It's just too hard. And the good news is, in many situations, you don't need to solve this gnarly problem of, frankly, where do I eat? But just what are the viable options? There are only a short list of really viable options. The truth is, because we haven't got that much time, I'm going to do refrigerator cooking and make something edible out of what's in the cupboard. We're going to go to the grocery store and buy some food, or we're going out. You know,
or starve, or take in.
You know, so I've got three or four options. Like, okay, I don't want to cook. Done. Now I'm either having food delivered, or I'm going to a restaurant. And which restaurants are close enough? I do a Google search. I do $1 sign, not two. It's this far out. Now I've got a list of four. Suddenly, what's the best doable option? I don't need to know what I want. All I need to know is, what do I want to eat in the next 15 minutes that's available off this list? We're done. And a lot of even big questions in life can be simplified that way. The doable options are nameable, and if all I need to know is which one to pick, I'm moving forward, I'll do it again tomorrow, let's go.
My guests are Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. The name of their book is Designing Your Work Life, How to Thrive and Change and Find Happiness at Work. What's your problem? Do you have one at work and you've been trying to figure out how to solve it? You can give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-9692. WNYC. You give a bunch of examples of what you call dysfunctional beliefs, money versus meaning. In chapter four, you present the dysfunctional belief, I can't possibly do all this work and I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah, right.
How do you reframe, I'm overwhelmed?
Well, we looked at overwhelmed, and actually that was a bunch of people in Silicon Valley, and I'm sure in New York, feel like it's just too much to mm-hmm. do. I've got too much to do at my job. And we broke it into kind of three kinds, Hydra, happy
and
hyper. Hydra overwhelm is just like, I got too many bosses. I got too many people who want reports from me. I've got too much stuff happening. I didn't choose any of this. My job, you know, I had a nice job and then Debbie quit and they gave me all the Debbie stuff. And then John quit and they gave me all the John stuff. And now I'm doing three people's jobs. And really the only solution there is to just make a list of everything and to try to start delegating things out, because you are in fact overwhelmed and there's too much to do. Happy's a little different. Happy's kind of my situation. I'm running the undergraduate program in design. I'm running the graduate program in design. I'm running this lab. Every time somebody says, hey, can you help us with this design thinking thing? I say, yes. I'm flying all over the place doing workshops. I'm happy. I chose it all, but it's way too much. And so in that case, I've just started delegating and hiring people to do the really these are interesting things, so it's not hard to get people to do them. But you got to be careful about doing too much. And then the super, you know, hyper overwhelm, I've done two startups if there's anybody out there in startup land or just gigging for yourself and you realize, gosh, today I've got to do 16 social media posts and I've got to answer 15 different things and blah, blah, blah. Well, you signed up to be your own boss. And now you're your own boss. And so that means you're on the job 24/7. And you're just going to have to renegotiate, you know, with all your friends and say, hey, look, I'm in the middle of starting this thing and it's really important to me. And I'm just not going to have time for everybody else. And then you're going to have to tell yourself the story, reframe the story. I'm not so busy. I'm not overwhelmed. I'm actually doing exactly what I want to do. I get up every day. I get up every day and say, everything I do today, I choose to do. Once you choose into that reality, your story helps you deal with it. And you don't want to stay in hyper too long.
That's a temporary solution.
But it's a you know, if you choose to do a startup, you choose to do something really, you know, you're building a new thing for your NGO or you're building a new thing for your company, then you may choose into hyper and then it's okay. You just tell a different story.
We have someone on the call on the line with an immediate situation because she's meeting with HR today.
Okay.
Sue is calling us from San Francisco. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I don't know if I'm coming through clearly.
You're great.
Hi. So I'm in an opportunity here where I'm meeting with HR today to discuss potential opportunities within the company. I want to stay with the company, but currently I am in a position where I can't get any further because my boss is at the top and he's not going anywhere anytime soon. He's been with the company 20 years and ideally I would love to his role. And so in the meantime, what I've been doing to create more activity for myself in this role that I'm at right now has been to work with his team, advising them, advising him as well, how to better communicate with each other. And in that, where I find my most passion, aside from doing my current role, I'm going to be talking with HR about how I can incorporate that into either a new role within the company or another opportunity. I just I feel that I've hit the ceiling of where I am and really want guidance, mentorship, and I'm seeking it within this big company, and it's unbelievable how sometimes that can be a journey and a difficult one, challenging. Well,
let me start by saying, I think you're doing exactly the right thing. In our Don't Resign, Redesign chapter, we have four redesign strategies, which are reframe, remodel, relocate, and reinvent. And you're doing a remodel with a shot at a relocate. So first of all, you're doing great. Thanks for being such a demonstration of these good ideas. So yes, up is over, by the way. The problem you have, everybody has. Mm-hmm. Organizations are flat. You know, zillions of millennials and Gen Z workers are coming into the workplace. Almost in every significantly sized company, there is a logjam at level X or B or 7,
director,
you know,
vice
and
president,
way more future directors, you know, potentially than there are director positions, and it's an attrition game. And yeah, your boss doesn't look like he or she is about to die. So what do? I got to go wide. I got to go qualitative, not quantitative.
Mm-hmm.
This has been true for a long time, but it's amazing how many people are still stuck on thinking the next thing I have to do is get a vertical promotion. So I can make my life more interesting. I can even find ways to make more money. I can be more professionally capable in lots of ways other than a direct promotion, which you've already sound like you've accepted. So good job. Now, you take the thing.
What do I ask HR today? Like, what is my main goal?
What's
to
a
get
good question?
Well, you already know the stuff you're already doing sort of on the side, the night job you gave yourself about, you know, can you think up ways to codify into an expanded job description this process development stuff, this communication, internal coaching? Think of things that have business value, that have objective improvements on the organization you serve, where they need that done as part of the structure. So take this thing you're doing that's incremental value, that's sort of elective, make it necessary, expand your job description, and maybe get rid of some of the stuff that's kind of boring.
Put a title on it like coaching. You know, I'm a communications expert. I'm good at coaching people into being the best version of themselves. That's a real role in organizations, and that could be added to your role as you're looking for things to go sideways, you know, with.
Or you can make it a project. If you can't quite get the job title, you can say, let's do the meeting optimization project, and we'll roll it through with a prototype in our department, and then if that works, I'll roll that out and train everybody in the entire company, and now suddenly you become an internal consultant.
Sue, good luck today.
Thank you so much, everybody. Great show. Thank you.
Close that deal.
Let's go to Judah, who's calling us from Washington Heights. Hi, Judah. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So I actually heard, you know, I'm actually quite familiar with design principles because I was a part of the University Innovation Fellowship at the D School in Stanford.
Oh, fantastic.
So I learned a lot of great program, learned a lot. And now a few years later, I've started my own startup called Gym Hop. And I'm trying to figure out how to apply those principles, which, you know, great ways of ideation and with other people And a lot of it focuses on collaboration, but when it's just one person, I guess I struggle in applying them by myself because I lack the motivation of external people helping me, you know, ideate and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if maybe you could help me with that.
Well, you need, you're absolutely right. You need a design team. It's hard to design by yourself, right? You need, because you need the stimulation of radical collaboration. You've heard all these words, radical collaboration, mindful of process, you know, reframing problems. So, you know, but as the individual starting a company, you still need to have an army to make yourself successful. You need people who are going to work with you on, you know, sales and marketing, on getting you the word out, on building the curriculum or the product that you're doing. So I think you still have to put together, I'd put together a team of advisors who are just, you know, the kinds of people who care about me and care about my success and would be giving me advice either in the business domain or in the personal growth domain. You mentioned, you know, I'm kind of procrastinating or stuck. It's like, okay, well, you know, there's 100 things to do. Building a startup is like flying a plane while you're trying to build it. So make a list of the 100 things to do and start finding collaborators, because there's no way you can do it all by yourself.
I think one thing you can do when you're working alone, you know, in design, we talk a lot about ideation and group brainstorming. A lot of the early stage steps of development are done collaboratively. And if you're literally the only guy there, frankly, jump quickly to prototyping. You know, like have a couple of ideas on your own, waste a couple of post-it notes, then boom, let's go out and try it. Let's go talk to a potential customer. Let's talk to a potential, you know, client or collaborator, because all prototypes are collaborative. Now, they're not necessarily with employees. You haven't got employees, but they're people you work with that you're doing things together and getting feedback on. That's still going to be energizing to you because it gets other people involved.
Judah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck to you. My guests are Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. We're talking about designing your work life, how to thrive and change and find happiness at work. Our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. While we have these experts here, if you have a question for them. It's interesting. Sue said the P word, passion. And, you know, you guys are, you say, you know, we maybe put too much emphasis
on passion. We got the anti-passion guy rep.
So I didn't say anti, I didn't say reject, but you said we invest too much in the idea of passion.
Right.
Why would it be good to stop thinking about, I need to be passionate?
Or think differently.
Well, you know, it's attractive to think that passion seems like a good thing, so that would be good. You know, we're pretty research-based, and we went over to a guy named Bill Damon, who's written a lot about this and studied this. He runs the Center for the Study of Adolescence at Stanford. And he looked at this. He said only 20% of the people he could survey have any singular identifiable passion. So the problem with the question, follow your passion, is, well, if I don't have one, I feel bad because the question implies everybody else has one, right? Well, 8 out of 10 people don't have one. And so that's why we don't think it's a good starting point. We think trying stuff and discovering what you're excited about is a good starting point. And if you have, I mean, if you have a passion, go for it. I mean, you know, but the problem actually is that passions typically emerge when you're young in the arts. You want to dance, you want to sing, you want to draw, you want to paint, you want to sew. But we discourage those passions because you can't make a living at those passions, which I don't think is true either. But so a lot of times people are saying, I got this passion, but I can't make any money with it. I got this other thing I do. I'm not that passionate about it. And once you set up that dichotomy, it's just a lose-lose.
We're not anti-passion. We're anti the assumption that passion's the starting place for everybody. That's why we'll lean into curiosity. Now go build. I'm curious about this. Go do stuff. Do it again. Yeah. Do it again. And then maybe you'll earn or build a passion. Most people earn passions. Don't start there.
Yeah, it's such a high bar. You know, I can't start till I have my passion. No, you can start on anything you're curious about.
Let's go to V, because V has, she beat me to one of my questions. V is calling us from Brooklyn. Hi, V.
Hi, how are you? Excellent. So thank you so much for having me on.
So you have a question. You have an important question.
I do. So quick question is, I know that the guest speakers went from sort of the startup and companies and now in academia. I'm in academia, and a lot of my sort of speaking and coaching side gigs are becoming more prevalent. And I'm wondering, how do you apply design thinking in making that switch, or thinking about making that switch where your side gigs kind of become your main gig?
Well, I think it sounds like you're actually doing it. You're prototyping what it would be like to be a speaker or running workshops or whatever the kinds of side gigs that you are doing. I think it's just, the more you try that, the more you're going to see whether or not that makes you feel happy. You know, I ended up in academics because I really, really wanted to teach. I'd been teaching for a while, but I took this full-time job with the goal of, you know, 10 years, we've got 1,000 designers in the world who want to work on hard problems. And now we get to go around and talk about books and stuff. But boy, if I don't get time in the classroom, I'm just really unhappy. So I like the mix I've got. I think you want to explore the mix you're looking for.
When do you know it's time to leave a gig?
You know, which I think we really believe in the set the bar low and clear it method and increment your way forward. So do the prototype. I'm doing a little coaching on the side. I'm in the academy. I probably have some fair time in the summer. I could do a bigger project. What if I tried to say, rather than find the point in time when I make the big scary jump, I never have to make a big scary jump, but I incrementally move my way forward until the new world pulls me so attractively I have no choice but to go do this thing that's already working. And so I literally find, and in the academy, there are ways to scale down, teach a little fewer classes, go from full-time to adjunct. You know, I can maybe scale down the old thing, scale up the new thing, and what if I never had to make a big scary jump? Let's try designing that. Then it's going from good to good.
How much should I think about money? Because jobs are about money, too.
Well, you live in reality,
mm-hmm.
and so we have to decide. So, in the thing I just said, by the way, that's a real good way to manage the money. The big jump is usually, and then I'm making nothing until it works, and then I'm going to go broke. So, well, I think you got to live in reality. We are always constrained by, you know, and can I afford it? If I can't afford it, I got to do it a different way.
The name of the book is Designing Your Work Life, How to Thrive and Change and Find Happiness at Work. It is by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. Thank you so much for helping out our listeners.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
This is All of It.